thank you so much for being here on this beautiful day, for being inside. And we are going to go out for the second part a little bit, so we'll get some outside time. I'm Kate Thorpe. I'm a grad student at Princeton. I'm in New Jersey. I'm really happy to be here. I grew up in Seattle and spent a lot of time in the mountains as a child and came here with my family here and there, and it's been really wonderful to teach here this year, and last year was my first year teaching in Holden. I have an MFA in poetry from the University of Iowa, I'm also a poet, and it was that love for poetry that led me to want to do a PhD, so I really see my vocation as a poet as like really core to myself. And my PhD is in 18th century poetry and British, so kind of like old poetry of the Enlightenment. I'm thinking about personification. Does anyone know what personification means? What is that?
Human-like traits to someone that is human.
Yeah, totally. So I'm thinking about how what happens when poets craft craft persons out of things, so like make a tree into a woman. Let's see. Yeah, let's grab some more chairs. Welcome, everyone. And there are handouts here. Let's just pass these around. If you don't have one, just take one of each. Cute. Yeah. So my dissertation is really focused on what it means to represent life in nature and the relationship between persons, people, humans, and the natural world, abstract ideas. What does it mean when we ascribe meaning as a person-like meaning to nature? And what does it mean, is that meaning ascribed by humans, or does it come inherently? Is it a kind of representation of meaning that's already there? So I'm really excited this week to talk about poetry of the elements, about kind of essential power in the natural world, and the all like what different kind of elemental forces mean and do, how we write about them in poems. I'm really excited to be teaching this alongside Wes and Sue's Bible study, thinking about power and like different kinds of power, and especially to focus this week on how we engage with power that's inherently in nature, godly power, creative power, of water, air, fire, fire and earth. Thank you. So my thought is that the first part of class will look at poems from a range of poets, kind of like 18th century through the 20th century, and especially look for how they represent or engage these elements and what kinds of strategies they use to do that. So especially formal, thematic, but also like how they use the poem, the poetry itself, the language and the space of the page, to represent, enact, embody the force, the thing that they're the element that they're describing. So we'll be thinking about these elements through reading poems, and then spending a really good part of class mostly going outside and writing, using some of these strategies we've talked about in our own writing, as a kind of meditative practice, to engage with the natural, beautiful natural world around us at Holden. So that's my hope. Thank you all for being here. I'm so happy you're all here, and we can write together and talk together about poems. Any questions up front? Anything confusing? Great. So today we're focusing on the poetry of water. And before we get started, Let's go around and do some introductions. I'd love to learn a little bit about you. Really, the focus of this class is on you and your work and your impressions of the poems. I'm hoping to guide discussion, but it's really about our discussion together as a community. Thinking again about it's in the round as much as possible, and thinking about the conversation that we create around these poems. So I definitely don't think of myself as like imposing meaning on you or on the poems. Anyway, all that said, that I just love to hear about where you're coming from, and maybe if like what your experience is with poetry, if you have a favorite poem. Or writer, or if you've never written before, that's totally fine. If you're just like completely just curious, that's also totally fine. But I'd just be so curious to hear kind of where you're coming from and your entry point into poetry or even art in general. Yeah. So, yeah, thanks. Great. Would you like to start?
Sure. My name's Peter.
Great.
I used to live here and work here, and now my wife and I are kind of back doing a little bit of backpacking and visiting the village, so thinking about a lot of the bodies of water that we see and are returning to and kind of what that means, and poetry is a nice way of kind of processing and putting things together.
Great.
I'm Peter's wife, Rachel. I'm backpacking, visiting the village, and I love poetry. And my favorite poet is probably my best friend Liz Clift, who I love reading poems by people that I love and seeing the words, the world through their words.
I'm Lily. I'm from Hastings, Minnesota, and I like to write poetry in my spare time.
Great.
I'm Michaela. I also used to live here. I was just kind of curious about poetry.
I'm Elizabeth, also from Hastings, Minnesota, also used to live here, and I'm here doing music this week. I don't have a lot of experience with poetry, but every time I'm introduced to it, I'm fascinated and intrigued, so.
No, wonderful.
Paul Friesengerber, I also used to live here. I once upon a time considered myself a singer-songwriter and have enjoyed poetry, especially in its relationship to music.
Great.
I'm Wes, and I'll approach your question from a different angle here. I live, my wife Sue, who should be here any moment, in the Issaquah Creek watershed. Issaquah Creek is a tributary. Ultimately, it goes into Lake Sammamish and into Puget Sound. Or the Salish Sea, depending on whose cultural context you want to name it as. And Issaquah runs through our neighborhood. I've lived there for 15 years now, but I grew up in Southern California where the only water was the ocean. So water is something out there and gigantic, and now it's something among and more intimate. It's a very different experience of water. Having a creek run through the neighborhood than living near the ocean. Speaking of
Susan. Yeah. She wants to wait one before she jumps in, though, huh?
The question is.
Okay. I'm Julie Webb. I'm a pastor here with a group from Napa, California. So Northern California, where we do have some water. There's the Napa River flowing through our town. History of flooding relationships and Army Corps of Engineers proposed that they, you know, build levees when they were having flooding issues, and the town said, we think we could maybe do this a different way, and they restored the wetlands instead and did this whole project that's been very effective. So there's a power dynamic there with water. I grew up on the poems of A.A. Milne and Ogden Nash, and have kind of dipped me in and out of poetry, mostly reading Little Writing the rest of my life.
Great.
I'm Dick Nicey. I've grown up with a body of water to my east all the time, whether it was Lake Michigan or the Mississippi River or now the St. Croix, Atlantic Ocean. Always been to the east, even for the schools I've gone to. I don't know why, but to the east. Poetry, for the most part, it's so confusing to me that it doesn't address me, apart from lyrics in songs. If that counts as poetry, then that has had a profound effect on me.
Oh,
lyrics.
I'm Kathleen Holler, and that's similar. The poetry that's in songs on a weekly basis, of course, you know, in church work, but also the lyrics that are in popular music and also in musicals. Mm-hmm. I mean, just done Man of La Mancha, the different words that are the strong words and the text that each one of the characters. And that, because it's a text of a song, yes, it is poetry.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Wonderful. Thanks.
I'm Becky Ellis, and I grew up in the prairie, South Dakota, on a farm, and so water was so important for our crops, and when we didn't get enough water, our crops would fail, and it would be a tough year on the farm. I'm a retired elementary teacher, and I just had a lot of fun with poetry with kids, and Sheldon Silverstein just pops up, you know. So it's probably fun poetry, but, you know, I like Robert Frost.
Great. Well, we're going to read some Robert Frost later this week.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, come back. Yay.
I'm Heidi Harris. I just moved from the big city of Austin to a smaller place north of Austin called Round Rock, Texas. And so I moved and had help moving my water feature from Austin to Round Rock into my garden. It was a big deal, and about 200 plants. And so I have frogs now already after being there for 3 months. So it's kind of sterile environment. It's a new community, 4 years old. 4 years. And so there are lots of rules, and so it's going to be hard going back from this natural environment to this kind of, you know, with all the rules. So the poets I like, Eichendorff, you know Eichendorff? Germany, romantic area. David White, England. Rumi, Rilke, Mary Oliver, lots of others.
Great.
And as a child, I used to sit by the water, look for frogs and creeks. And I know the Baltic Sea and the North Sea, where I went again 2 years ago and went to some islands. Mm. So I love being on the water.
Wonderful. Thank you all. Terry, that's wonderful. We have I love what a mix we have here. People from all different places and all different relationships to water and to poetry. Yeah, wonderful. Well, let's get started with a poem.
Did you get
introductions? Oh, Sue, yes. So here, I have two.
Yes, please,
of course.
I'm Sue. Wes probably told you about our life together.
No, I stayed with you.
You must have got bodies of water.
Okay. Yeah, we really are enriched and grounded by our Issaquah Creek that winds through our community, and water has always been a place of meditation and earthing. The combination of it being the same and flowing. I mean, you're not going to the same space, but it flowing, and that's always been moving to me and deepening. And I like the English romantic poets, and I like lots of different. I sort of like Mary Oliver and the Mystics and
Whitehead. Well, I'd love to linger on that question of the same and flowing at the same time today. But that's been really part of my thinking or questioning about about talking about poems today and also writing. So yeah, I really love to come back to that. Great, thank you. So I'd love to start by reading a poem called River by Denise Levertov. It's the first in your packet, and I'm sorry the page is a little messy. I found it, I actually downloaded it from online. But I think the poem should be really legible. Does anyone know Denise Levertov's work at all? Oh, good. Yeah. Can you tell me just a little bit about her? Do you know, like, just like her context, or where was she living? What time period?
I got arrested once distributing one of her poems.
Really?
At the Westin Hotel in downtown Seattle, after Norman Schwarzkopf, some of you may remember him, who ran Desert Storm, was being given an award as a model for youth. And she wrote a poem about the combat earth movers in Iraq, where people basically buried lines of Iraqis in the sand, and how it includes the line that I forgot about how much one of the soldiers said, "At first I was afraid, and then I came to enjoy it." And that's like how it ends, just on that note of somebody enjoying burying people in the sand.
Yeah, she wrote a lot of poetry in protest of the Vietnam War, and protest in general, really active politically through her poems. Yeah, she's someone who's really inspired me in that regard.
Died relatively young, right, of cancer?
In the 90s. I don't know actually how old, but yeah. But she was, and she was in Seattle at that point.
Jewish by background.
Right, right. Yeah, so I just think she came to America in the 40s from London, I believe, and lived the last part of her life in Seattle. So 20th century poet. Yeah, great. Could someone read? Would someone be willing to read this poem? She wrote a lot of poems about nature also, and spiritual lens. Would anyone like to read?
Sure. Go ahead.
You can. Thanks.
Go
ahead. Oh, okay. Rachel.
River. Dreaming the sea that lies beyond me, I have enough depth to know that I am shallow. I have my bowls, my pools of rock I flow into and fill, but I must brim my own banks, persist, vanish at last in greater flood, yet still within it follow my task, dreaming towards the calling sea.
Thank you. So does anyone have just first impressions of the poem? What immediately leaps to mind? Are there words, images?
Just thinking about the anthropomorphism you were talking about.
Yeah.
That, you know, this is from the perspective of the river. The river is speaking.
Yeah. Yeah, great. What else?
It sort of feels like it moves like a stream or a river. Just in, I guess maybe that's, I was trying to figure out why I feel that way, but it's the order in which she presents things. You have a bowl, a pool of rock, you flow into it, fill, and then you bring the banks and persist and vanish in a greater flood. And so I feel like it's all moving down.
I think the line, I have enough depth to know I'm shallow, is really important. And I was thinking about kind of like moving towards something deeper throughout the poem.
Mm. Yeah, lovely. So a little bit like Julie was saying, there's something about the movement of the poem.
Yeah.
That's helping to create depth or reflection or...
Mm-hmm.
Lovely.
He's hearing it at a different level too. Like your comment, Paul, clearly it is the voice of the river. But I'm also hearing it as her voice.
Mm-hmm.
It works that way too, that the river is a metaphor for her own internal journey and task, etc.
Great.
I'm also struck by the dreaming that begins and ends the poem. So that bracket, the dreaming is kind of you know, is the impetus or before, or the inspiration, or the movement. And then, yeah, I love that, but it's, yeah, that some of that being and moving, too. It's there already, and yet she's, yeah.
Yeah. And that's a, like, I'm so curious about this with poems about water, that dreams seem like a kind of subtext that often come up in these poems. And I, yeah, that relationship of dream and personal experience, narrative, like, what's that? It's really interesting, yeah. Because we often think of dreams as illusion or delusion. So what relationship is the dream here? Like, how, what's the relationship between that and something like depth or truth or understanding? Other immediate thoughts. This is all great. So I'd love to take a minute and think about how these impressions, how Levertov creates these impressions in her form of the poem. Like how, like a poem is, it's a thing made out of words. And a poet is shaping it in some way to create meaning. So I'm curious about what strategies does she use? So Sue was saying, like, the repetition of dreaming is one example. So there's a kind of like keyword or kind of envelope structure. So I'm just going to write up some kind of formal strategies that she uses, some tools. So an envelope. Truly, I'm curious about coming back to your comment, and if we can think more about how she creates this feeling of the river. Like, what is she doing in terms of, say, line breaks?
I want to say, though, I think an important part of the envelope is the sea, because it's dreaming the sea, and then it's dreaming towards the calling sea, and for me that becomes the why, you know, this is what we're heading towards, is this openness that the sea represents. So in terms of language, she's going to start with little broken phrases, kind of,
yeah.
Right, as though the flow of the water were being changed or disturbed.
So, and one term for breaking before the natural end of a sentence is something called enjambment. I don't know if you've heard this term, but it creates real movement. What else does enjambment do? If you break, say, dreaming the sea that break lies beyond me, I have enough depth. Break to know I am shallow. I have my pools of rock I flow into and fill. But I must brim my own banks, persist. What does that do to end, to break like that?
What are different bumpies?
A bumpy, yeah. Mm. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Mm. Broken phrases, really interesting word. Broken, bumpy. Yeah, what else?
It forces us to put together words that aren't necessarily grammatically connected, but are kind of characteristically connected, or have a deeper meaning when you hold them together instead of the ones that are held grammatically together.
Right. Can you say more about that? Or, like, where do you see that?
Well, so, my pools of rock I flow into and fill. So, my pools of rock I flow into and fill. But my pools of rock I flow into and fill, but I must, you know. So rock and flow get really set against each other, you know, next to each other in a way that's more interesting than if it were just my pools of rock I flow.
Right. So we get all of these other meanings besides the kind of linear, rational, like the meaning that sentence wants us to create. And that's really interesting too, that rock and flow are in direct connection. Like, what do you think? What do you make of that? Rock, flow, so close together. We're forced to move, but to move from one to the other so quickly. Rock, I flow.
They seem by nature oppositional, don't they?
Yeah.
Rocks don't flow.
Right. Rocks don't flow. Yeah.
Then I also think of like lava, where rocks do flow.
Yeah.
And so, and this super
right.
powerful image and how water is powerful like that too.
Right, yeah, so like actually how, whoa.
I think
is that
it's the
rain?
Operation
of
no. giving an example.
Oh, okay, I was like,
there's
what comes
over there? It's not raining.
That's very surprising.
It's the big bird.
That's right. That's right. You asked about water.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah, great.
I was thinking a lot of these comments too that. Rocks flow with lava, but they also flow with floods, which she mentions in the next.
Right.
And of course, here we are where they flow with glaciers, as long as we still have them. So rocks do flow if there's enough power to push them around.
Yeah. And water also, like if you like looking at the creek and how the water flows over rocks and is changed by the rocks, but also is. Also does flow, like it actually, rocks create warm flow in some ways, because they stream, they like move the water in certain ways or poison.
So here, I hope this isn't irrelevant, a little fun fact that maybe, I don't know if Denise Levertov knew, but I just heard recently. So we use a lot of concrete, main ingredient in concrete is sand, right? We use more sand than anything else other than air and water elements in here. And the interviewer said, the premise was we're running out of sand to make concrete. And he said, but the deserts are full of sand. He said, no, desert sand's not like river sand. Concrete's made from river sand. River sand has rough edges, so it can stack. Desert sand is like, he said, like building a house with marbles.
Wow. That's fascinating. So there's like a desert roughness. I like that. Hey, so bumpy, rough. Yeah, that's fascinating. That actually brings me to another question I had about how emphasis works in these lines. Like that when we have a break, one of the things I was noticing is that there's weird emphasis. Mm-hmm. So one sort of kind of conventional meter of poetry, and if we get to the Wordsworth poem, we will see this meter of iambic pentameter. Does anyone know what iambic pentameter is? Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, but summer's lease hath all too short a date. So you get this sense of like, I mean, I've read that, like, I've like said that really mechanically, but you get the sense that there's like da-da-da-da-da, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's like people talk about it in terms of the human heartbeat, they talk about it in terms of walking. There's something really core to this meter in English poetry. It goes really far back. So if you have an iamb, so iambic pentameter, super, super brief, like less than a meter, but you have an iamb. Iambic pentameter is two different things. Iamb, which is the foot, like the particular kind of meter, and pentameter, which is how many feet there are in a line. Okay, so if we have an iamb, it's saying there's a particular kind of foot, it's da-da. We have like unstressed, stressed. Da-da, da-da, da-da. Pentameter means there are five of those. So there are 5 feet, and we call these feet weird, right? Totally weird. Okay, so here, dreaming the sea that lies beyond me, I have enough depth to know I am shallow. I have my bowls, my pools of rock I flow into and fill, but I must brim my own banks, persist, vanish at last in greater flood. What do you notice about that rhythm? So it's free verse. What does free verse mean?
So the feet are all different.
The feet are all the feet are all different. Wet, great. And that Freeverse, basically, there's not one rule she's following. That there's a freedom about it. That it's like it's after kind of breaking open these old ideas or forms. But even in Freeverse, right, meter is really, really deep and important. And all of these formal strategies are really still present. So then it's like fun to think about how she's using these formal strategies in new ways. So I think, Julie, you'd said that the feet are all different. Did you say that? No, who said that? Paul, you said that. So tell me more about that. Or like, what's like weird? Is there anything that strikes you about the feed that you notice? Or anyone else do?
She plays with the number of accents in a line.
Right.
So that some have two, some have three, some have four.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And there are always also these quick, like anapests, which is like, then there are two unstressed syllables together, dreaming the sea, which is kind of like a quick, it kind of like pushes you forward. It's kind of lighter. What else?
In terms of just sheer length of lines,
yeah,
it gets broadest in the middle.
Great.
Of that second.
Yeah.
Stanza or whatever we're gonna call it.
Yep. Yeah. Great. Yeah, so line length is something to play with.
Young banks persist, vanish at last, greater flood.
Yeah, what effect does that have? We start with shorter, there's a little bit of an opening breath, and then we end with the calling sea enclosed. Hi, welcome.
Sense of the movement. And the unevenness is part of the filling and the brimming and the flooding. So the words, kind of the length of the lines, evokes or leads us into experience the specific words that are.
Yeah, I love that.
Seems like it's merging from being the river into the greater.
Great, yeah. Can you say more about that? How is it merging? How does she create connection? We've talked about broken, right? Broken, bumpy, rough. How is there a merging connection here too?
Calling sea. The calling.
Calling. The calling, yeah. Also wondering, so we often think about poetry, traditional poetry, right? Whatever that means. We often think about that in terms of rhyme. Does she have overt, and where does rhyme usually fall when we think about poetry?
At the end.
At the end, yeah, and say a sonnet. There's like a particular rhyme scheme, and the rhyme is at the end. So she doesn't have that. But does she have rhyme-like moments? Do you, like, as you hear the poem, do you hear connections between, like, sonic, which is basically just sound connections? Dreaming the sea that lies beyond me. I have enough depth to know I am shallow. I have my bowls, my pools of rock I flow into and fill. What connections of sound do you hear?
Just that my bowls, my pools, my banks.
My bowls, my pools, a rock, I flow, all those O vowels.
Amazing, all these O vowels. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so sound is a way. Something like a slant rhyme is one way to talk about these rhymes that are not perfect rhymes, or often not, that there's a kind of array of sounds that are directly related to each other. And our ears hear that. What does that do? What effect does that have? To have all of these O sounds within the space of two or three lines. If you think about how a river moves and flows, what does that do? I know this is really, really pernickety. You guys are being very, very patient to work through this.
An element of surprise?
Okay, yeah, yeah. Can you say more about that? How so?
It sounds uplifting to me.
Great, yeah.
I suppose there's a reason we talk about long vowels versus short vowels, because long ones flow more than short ones.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so the O in particular is doing real work in terms of extension and connection, flow, yeah.
That may be partly why I had that sense of water changing shape and changing direction, because she's doing that with her vowels.
Totally.
There.
And then we get all these is, like persist, vanish, yeah. In, still, it.
Fill into, yeah, yeah.
I was noting the alliteration too, and that comes out of nowhere, it seems, to brim my own banks. There's no other alliteration that I noticed, but there it is right at the, almost at the center.
What is alliteration?
And it's not even clear exactly, like, the rest of the imagery seems pretty clear what it's saying. Like, we know what pools are, we know what shallow is, but brim my own banks isn't obvious exactly what that's saying, at least to me, maybe yeah. To somebody else.
Yeah. That's a great question. So alliteration, what is alliteration?
Where the initial letters sounds are the same.
And the initial letter sounds are the same, yeah. So it's another way of like working with sound patterns. Yeah, great.
Does the yet still mark an abrupt shift?
Great.
Where you got all the bumpy, rough, everything, and yet all of a sudden it's got a singular task.
Yeah, great question.
It closes off all this other stuff.
Great, and we move to the it, like yet still within it, that it's like from O to it, like the sound or ship, absolutely, with the yet. Yeah.
And while you're there, look at all the T's, which are definitely not long.
Great.
All right.
Yeah.
Yet, still, it, task, within even, but that's not as good a T sound. Yeah, toward.
So there's also this sense of real tension in the poem between these really stark differences in terms of sounds, rock flow. That takes me like being back to that contra that tension.
I'm struck that yet still is really redundant, and so she could have said and yet within it or
right.
You know, yet within it, but she wanted that, I guess. That alliteration or that repetition of sound, or maybe she wanted the word still. Which is interesting in a poem where there's a lot of flow.
Right. Yeah, that's a great, yeah.
But and both would be disjunctive. You could do still.
Mm-hmm. You could do still
like,
within it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Still can function nearly a synonym of yet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's underscored by having two of those disjunctive words.
It's a great point. It's a disjunction. And like so many different levels. And still is such a weird word, right? Because it means still, like there, it operates in so many different levels in terms of time and space, right? Like I'm being still right now, I'm not moving, but I'm still not moving. I'm still, right? yeah, such a great word, that's a great point. So I'm curious about, go back to Dick's point about the yet still and this shift that happens. And also back to Wes's early point about this I. Like, what is this I doing? What is the, like, let's just kind of open out, this is wonderful thinking about form. How can we make sense, or like, what are some ways we can make sense of this task and of this I, of the voice? What kind of task is this, do you think?
My initial sense was the relationship of the individual and the community.
Great.
Your sense of belonging and maintaining who you are amidst the larger body. Mm-hmm.
Mm, yeah,
I like that. Huh.
Great. And does this thinking about form, does it help you? Does it help with that metaphor, or does it shift that metaphor, or make of it, yeah.
Well, it's interesting, too, because kind of echoing that, she doesn't introduce the I until three lines in. Like, it wasn't, she doesn't start out like, I'm dreaming of the sea, or I dream of the sea. She starts out dreaming of the sea that lies beyond me, like, with this larger idea, and then I have enough depth. Like, and when she's introducing herself, it's also with this shallow, and then it's kind of, yeah, so she's not, she doesn't make it clunky up front, and you get a sense that it's about something that's not just about herself.
Don't you already have it in the second line with the me? And you got the first person singular before you get the I.
But, you know, end of the second line, first of the beginning of the third line is almost the same.
But I feel like if I was writing this right away, like the first draft would be like, I dream of the sea that lies beyond me, and then like a friend who helps me find my voice would be like, cut that, move that there.
Yeah, the gerund. Because, like, what does a gerund do? Dreaming. What does it do for the reader to say dreaming the sea versus I dream the sea? I think that's a great point. What is the difference there?
It slows it down.
It slows it down. Can you say more about that?
I felt like the I's kind of, the long O's kind of show this kind of meandering, like kind of the body of the river, and the I's are kind of like a cascade a little bit, and kind of bring you to a stop, like this is now where we kind of tie things up, and the dreaming is kind of like this flowing to the end.
Great. So in terms of movement, that like so much of this poem is embodied in movement, and these are creating different kinds of time, even, in this, yeah.
But also, I think one of the strong words is vanish. Yeah. The fact that, you know, all before, there's identity there, and if you vanish, that means you're blended in. You've, you know, your identity is gone.
Right.
But, you know, yet still, and that. He comes back and says, nope, I'm not gone.
Still,
nope,
follow
I've not
my,
been swallowed up.
Follow my task. There's something really specific about that. Yeah. Yeah, and I also love, thinking about the sea, thinking about the community. And the sea, it's also, like, a community, but a larger, even, like, mystical meaning or metaphorical meaning. Or, like, what does the sea, what does the sea conjure in us?
Get a sense that this poem has to do with identity and work, and a river's work is to flow and to flood and to step out sometimes, but the river never finishes its job. It gets to the sea, but it keeps flowing from the other end, so it's not really done, and that's kind of how people operate too.
Great.
Is we work and we live, and then, you know, we flow to the, you know.
Yeah, and it's a kind
people
of
people keep working.
Great, it's a kind of continuity. Yeah, that's great. And very different than how we might think about work in terms of, like, I'm going to get this task done, and then I'm going to, like, move on to the next thing. It's a very different idea of what that task is. Yeah.
She mentioned vanish. What stands out for me is persist, too. And then it's I have, I am, I have, I must, and then persist pops out at me.
Great. Yeah, and that was one of the things that I was fascinated by with the rhythm, too, the meter, that so many of these lines in the middle stanza emphasize at the very first beat, as if it's like brim my own banks, vanish, into and fill. There's like a real like pushing at this. Like there's work involved in this. It's not like da-da-da-da-da-da, I'm just gonna like ease into it. Like no, there's like real persistence. Yeah, and that's so interesting. Yeah, it was.
Since you're identifying the multiple levels here, another one that occurred to me here is, as you were saying, still,
yeah.
But depth and shallow
great.
Obviously have double meanings too. Doesn't necessarily mean less water. Obviously, a shallow person is like we call superficial.
Yeah.
But a shallow river, only a shallow river has rocks and pools. A deep river doesn't have pools.
Right.
They're submerged.
That's a great point.
In fact, my initial thought, I wanted to be pedantic about it, but you know, I was talking about Issaquah Creek. To me, a creek has pools, rivers don't.
I was just getting to that point. I was reading through and I was thinking, but what I'm picturing in my mind as I read this poem is a stream or a creek.
Like Railroad Creek.
And then it merges into the river, and the river is eventually going to reach the sea.
Totally.
But she's describing a stream or a creek. And if you've seen one, when it comes into a pool and it's the flow is not very great, it does, you know, gets into this little pool and it has to come up and up and up until it brims the banks of that pool and then it spills over into this little waterfall over the side.
And that's how it moves. That's how movement happens. And then it's also one of the things that's interesting about that is it's not continuous. It's not even or linear movement. That it's non-linear. So I was thinking about time in these poems in relationship to the Bible study that Wes and Sue led this morning, and how time is not linear or direct even often in poetry, that there are all these different levels and kinds of time. And that's one of the things that can happen, or that I think poets, we can think about with rivers, is that in some way it seems like a continuity in movement, but there's also a kind of, like it's not even, it's the same even as it's moving, like there are all these different levels. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to think about rivers in terms of personal narrative and personal experience and even reflection on lives and on our lives and the relationship between the individual, like singular I, and larger meaning or a larger context, like a way of thinking about our lives. So I think it's like one, so that's one of the things I've been thinking about for today, is writing about rivers in relationship to narratives, personal narratives, or it can be kind of larger collective narratives. So I want to spend really brief time. We didn't, thank you all for this beautiful reading of this poem. This was just so, so helpful for me in my reading of it, and lovely. I just want to quickly read through this Langston Hughes poem, and as we're doing that, think about how this is kind of similar to the Levertov poem and different in terms of the I voice, and knowledge experience that he's sharing. So would someone like to read this?
Sure.
Great, thanks, Paul.
I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood and human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
Beautiful, thank you. So how is this different, similar? What strikes you about this poem? You could think about, you know, formal techniques we've talked about, or any kind of impressions. How is the eye working here?
I'm talking about his own experience.
Okay, yeah.
Places, history, culture.
Great, great. Yeah.
He's letting his title do a lot of work.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's great. Yeah, can you say more about that?
Well, because he's speaking as an I, but he's speaking as an I as somebody who's Black. And also, I think about it as, like, we, like, I feel like the canon of environmental writing often is a lot of, like, rich white dudes, right? So he's speaking in, like, this voice of, like, what does it mean for me as a Black person, as a Black man, to know rivers? What is the history of my people? What is, like, what place am I coming from? And how do I place myself in this canon of, like, nature writing, essentially?
Yeah.
And I doubt that Langston Hughes himself built a hut near the Congo or raised pyramids above the Nile, so I feel like it's the collective eye.
The Negro.
Collective, even like mythic, possibly. like this broader, like the eye that takes in this broad expanse of human experience. Yeah. Myth and history, really like breadth of history and time that this eye can take in. Yeah, how does he create that feeling of like real solemnity, real power here? I've known rivers, really like direct and powerful.
He's an authority.
Yeah, how does he communicate or create that sense of authority?
He's like, comparing.
Yeah, great. Circle, I'd like you just to take like 5 seconds and circle all of the eyes in the pool. So it's a poem of 10 lines. How many eyes are there?
Eight
eyes. That's amazing. Where do they fall on the line?
Solidly at the beginning, for the most part.
At the beginning. Yeah. So he's using something called anaphora. So this is another patterning technique. Does anyone know that word? Yeah, it's an unusual one, right? So it basically means starting a line with the same word. I've known rivers.
Is that A-N-A?
Yeah.
A-N-A, yeah. A-N-A-P-H-O-R-A.
More like metaphor.
So, and he does this, right, the first two lines. I've known rivers.
So, and this is classic Black preaching technique, too.
Oh, interesting.
Repetition.
Oh my gosh, right. Right. And what effect does it have in a sermon, for example?
It's rhetorical powerful. Effect? It's like a refrain. It builds the energy in the room and the response among the people.
Great. Oh, that's wonderful. So it's like a direct, elicits community readers' response. Refrain energy, authority. We were just talking about authority. But it's not the authority of a singular eye, right? Because of all of the places he's referencing. And the other thing that's really interesting, I think, is the specifics. Like, these rivers are really specific. The Euphrates, the Congo, the Nile, the Mississippi. Like, it's mythic and his larger historic history, but also very specific. So I think that's something to kind of keep in mind, too, which is kind of different than Levertov. With river, it could be any river or creek.
And while you're on that, at least for me, the sudden historical reference totally jumps out. Right, Euphrates, it's all about timelessness and ancient, and suddenly, when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, that's not even something, when did Abe Lincoln go to New Orleans? Like, what's that?
No idea.
Like, that's not like Gettysburg or like some famous thing.
Yeah.
It totally jumps out, like, because it's
point.
Very specific, but like, I have no idea when that happened.
It's like an anecdote, yeah.
Anybody know what that's a reference to?
Oh, he used to build rafts and sail on his rafts, didn't he?
But he's also putting it on the same level, right? Like, that's what's so cool about it, is he's saying, like, New Orleans and Abe Lincoln and, like, our history in the United States is as important as, like, the Nile.
Yeah.
I really like when he got to the Mississippi. I could really identify with that. Not so much the other places.
Right, this is what names contacts. Landscapes. It's very specific.
They all felt like sources of dignity to me.
Oh, and Abraham Lincoln almost drowned in the creek. Remember that? His friend saved him.
That's
a good story.
Kentucky.
Also, the last thing I just want to point out is short lines, long lines. Short lines, like short line, first line, and then really long lines. It's like expansiveness. That brings, I think it's connected to all of these points, individual, community, small to broad, history, okay.
That was the Black reference to Abraham Lincoln during slavery and the
Yeah, there's the familiarity. It's not Abraham Lincoln, it's Abe Lincoln.
These are all legendary civilizations. Greece, Congo, Nile. And for African American to claim those in the midst of U.S. Racism. This one I happen to have some background. It's part of the Harlem Renaissance, so it's asserting we have a culture equally as deep as your culture.
Yeah.
So it's not, it's a different way to assert dignity as women.
Wonderful. So
you ignore our
power.
Culture, but it's as big as yours or bigger.
Yeah, so there's a political impetus and power and weight behind this poem. Yeah, that's beautiful. Great. Okay, so before we run out of time, I want to have us go outside. I'm going to take half an hour and then come back with 5 minutes and do some quick sharing. So what I'd like you to do is bring some paper, bring as many, you know, whatever you think you want, a sheet of paper, make sure you have a writing utensil, and let's all go to the river and spend some time writing some kind of, what I was thinking is some kind of, think about narrative, personal narrative. You could bring in personal with collective. We've listed some great formal strategies. You could choose a couple of these strategies. I'm not going to limit you and kind of tell you what to do, but you could say write a poem that begins with the same phrase, or the same first words, or that varies, short lines, long lines. Any of these strategies are up for your use. And really, so no pressure whatsoever. What I would suggest is that you walk to the river, find a place that speaks to you, that calls to you in some way. Maybe it's like the way a rock looks, or the way the water flows over a rock, or a place that looks comfortable to sit. And spend some time breathing, paying attention, noticing what do you hear, what do you see, what do you smell, what do things touch like what does it feel like to have the log beneath you? So spend a few minutes really being present in this place. And then if you want to, you could free write, you could just write whatever comes to you, you could choose a word that's speaking to you. You could describe the specifics of like one little place where the water is flowing over a rock. Any of these things are up for your use. So I was thinking about this in terms of an I voice. So if you want to use I in some way. The third poem we didn't have a chance to look at is Wordsworth returning into a river after much time away and feeling back at home at the river. So you could also think, especially for everyone who's lived at Holden, who's coming back to Holden, reacquainting yourself with this river, this particular place. What does that feel like? Write as much or as little as you like. If you write one line, that is wonderful. There is no pressure. Whatever is calling to you is fantastic. Does that make sense to everyone? Great. Okay, so if we could come back at 5:25 and just have a couple of minutes here to share and respond to the exercise, that would be great. Great, well let's just have a couple minutes left. Let's just get started and others can join us as they come back, trickle back in. So I'm just curious what that experience was like for you, and if you had any immediate reflections, thoughts. What I thought is that just in our last couple of minutes, we could maybe go around, and if you want to share any kind of reflection on the experience or just a word or two, a phrase, from your writing, I would just like welcome that and invite it. So are you up for that? Does that sound good? Okay, great. Who would like to start?
You're looking at me.
Great.
After several attempts, I wrote, fire is burning, trees collapsed on the ground. The river is rushing past.
And fire, you have fire in there too. Yeah. So we're just going around and just saying something about, you can say, like, reflect on the experience for you, or and or say a phrase or even a couple of words from what you wrote. So no pressure, just like inviting your responses.
I'm just blank right now in the form I took, but you will know. I just took Holden and did an acrostic. That's what I want. Acrostic.
Yes. Lovely.
So Holden, hiking on holy ground to me, and open doors, no locks or keys, loaded with fragrances, lavender, baking bread, mountain air.
Beautiful.
So just,
lovely.
I mean, it's elementary, but just kind of, yeah.
Thank you.
I didn't get to lighting, probably couldn't end it, but I was trying to, all I could think of was kind of contrast, so I put words down like the river, calming and noisy. I was thinking like white noise or tumult. Both. Pliant, meaning it goes right around all these rocks. On the other hand, it's slowly eroding every single one, so it's relentless as well. So I'm just kind of bouncing those images. So maybe it's the notebook on the way to a poem. So more of those, but two examples.
It gave me a chance to put some words on the walk I took earlier this afternoon. So I started after a lover talk saying, remembering a bridge somewhere, not too far. And I wrote about the walk.
When a bunch of people were going out onto the bank, the sandy bank where the sun was out and logs, and I thought, I'm just looking for some place away from the crowd, and this is what came out. Behind the bank of the roaring river, a muddy, rocky patch of pools, flies, dead grass, broken sticks abound, and quietly, apart, new life springs within.
I'm not sure I have anything that I want to offer, but it was not nearly enough time.
I realized our discussion
it just so much, yeah.
Hopefully it's like an invitation to return. Yeah.
So I
you could just say, even reflect on what the experience was like.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of, I guess I would say, iconic words that emerged, kind of, especially as being with the Lovatop poem and the both and of it being a flowing journey and the earth and the elemental nature of that being. And I was moved by Hugh's words of before the human blood was flowing through the veins, whatever, something to that effect. So just how ancient and elemental that movement and that glory of the light is. And just kind of, I was moved to kind of get in touch with that elemental nature within me, that deep communion with the river. And just things begin to emerge, phrases and flowing. And so our conversation and your shaping that of both those poems really was evocative and awakened something that's just kind of beginning to pour out.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually,
On a continuous journey.
Remind me of your name again.
Gwen.
Okay.
On a continuous journey, changing, enduring, alive.
So I gathered a number of images. I'll just read whatever. Why contemplate the river? My stones are not smoothed with time and tumbling. My flow does not gather in the whirl of an upset stump. My fish never gulp at the air above my shoulders. My eddies collect no fireweed seeds. No weeping cedar kisses the sweat from my skin. No sun dances in my ripples. No algae adorns my sunken chins. No swallows feast above my supine form. But there is cool water for my soul's tired feet.
I just commented on the different layers that I saw. Suddenly the creek looked like a quilt over some hard rock, so the softness and the hard, and then moving and still. So that was what gathered my attention.
I took the time to say thank you to the rivers and the water that's impacted my life.
Mm. Lovely. I run with the sun dancing on the top of the ripples.
Oh, lovely. Mm.
I kind of just read what I wrote, but thank you for the time. I feel like we've been walking and enjoying this place, but haven't had time to catch thoughts, so I appreciate that. Just learning to cross rivers. In Iowa, I taught freshmen how to move from one bank to another. I stood in stream, held hands. Is it okay if I help you? Almost there. A dropped cell phone, a drowned boot, a comment, today I can skip the gym. These kids will never survive the environmental apocalypse, my roommate said. What she didn't know was back then, I couldn't hold myself steady. I was just okay being wet. It took years to read rock, to find solid places to plant my feet. You have to push hard when you want to be tentative. Force creates friction, one step at a time.
Mm-hmm. It took years to read rocks.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I was thinking about glaciers and what kind of conversation would be happening. I hiked the Spider Glacier about 5 years ago, and it's about half what it used to be, but I couldn't quite figure out what that conversation would be. I was thinking that they're a good metaphor or a good thinking about personifying the glacier, but didn't get very far.
That's fascinating. Oh, I'm so curious as to how that evolves, especially since so much of the creek water comes from the glaciers and how the trajectory works. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, I need to let you all go. Thank you all so much for this really rich time.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you.